Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it's 3:20 p.m. And I do apologize for the background noise. My flight out of Juneau was heavily overbooked because of a cancelled flight yesterday, and I got bumped for no apparent reason. So, going to be on a circuitous route home today, and I probably won't get home to Dallas until sometime very early tomorrow morning. Bit of a mess in terms of my travel schedule, but there are a couple of notable events that I've been able to just pay attention to while sitting around in airports. Thought that it was interesting that that we're starting to see more action in the currency markets, because when we think about India, they've been devaluing the currency or allowing the currency to fall, and now we're hovering around the psychological 80 level, and the RBI is starting to intervene. Now, we've been in an environment for the last 20 years where there was competitive currency devaluation. Whereas what we're now starting to see is that because people are heavily influenced by fear of inflation, what they're in fact doing is trying to appreciate their currencies and to try and take some of the edge off of the pressure. So India did step in today. Now, we didn't see a big dynamic move. This isn't the kind of huge move that they are really going to say that they're going to support the currency indefinitely, but they certainly want to arrest the pace of the decline. So we're due a bit of a bounce. China has also stopped allowing the renminbi to devalue. So when we think about the Nifty index in India is right in the region of the peak from back in June. Now, it's been aided by the decline in the currency, but then that's not enough. We're going to have to see more global liquidity in order for Indian equities to continue to do well. And we're still in a liquidity tight environment. Now, when we think about the Chinese renminbi, it's really all about how much money is China going to print. So the currency was a little bit steadier in here today. And then we continue to see these big headlines about just how much money they're going to print, what they're going to do to try and support the economy. And there's a lot of tough talk, but there's not a lot of action. So the Shanghai Property Index is still in the region of its lows, and there's no real sign of a big push on the upside either. Then, when we think about the banking sector, well, they're on the hook for a lot of the loans related to the property sector, but of course, they're also really state-owned, so they're not going to go bust. But that doesn't mean that they have to be among the best performing shares in the world either. And when we think about what's going on here, well, we're right in the region of the lows from over the last 7 years. So it's around the time where we should anticipate some efforts underway to try and support the index, but there's no sign of it yet. And that's despite all these big prognostications about how much money they're printing. But the reality is that the bigger an economy gets, the more money you print. Well, then every successive time you do it, you have to print even more to have the same effect. Now, we've seen exactly that kind of phenomenon evolve in places like the USA and in Europe, and now we're starting to see it in China too. So it's not that they can get away with printing as much as they have in the past. They would have to multiply it, and we're just not seeing that same money supply growth there, and that's weighing on the economy. So we're just not seeing that same push that we would normally associate with a big fiscal event. So we're still in a rather tight environment. Now, when we think about the 10-year Treasury, I find it particularly interesting that everyone wants to talk about inflation, but the 10-year yield is going down. So it peaked at 3.5%. It's now at 2.79. So this is looking increasingly like a failed upside break. If we start to see this breaking down again, well, then we have to at least give some credence to the possibility that yields are going to bottom somewhere between 1.5% and half of 1%. So, in other words, the yield could halve or more from where it is right now. And of course, that would be in conjunction with a significant recession. So, obviously, there are some significant events underway. Now, when we think of then about the yield curve, it's a reliable lead indicator for a future recession, and it's significantly negative. So, Not only is it negative and at a deeper negative level than we've seen at any point since 2000, but it's staying down there. And the longer it stays inverted, the more pressure that's likely to bear. But one thing that is also something that we shouldn't anticipate is that even though we have an inverted yield curve, it takes time for that tightening liquidity transmission mechanism to feed through into consumer behavior. So when we look at American Express, they came through with earnings today and they were strong. So that's taken up by the media as, oh, the consumer is still really healthy and they're out spending on credit cards, and credit card spending has gone up significantly above where it was in 2021. And we're back to pre-pandemic levels, but that's not necessarily positive. So if we look at the share price, it's actually going down. And we continue to see that there is a sequence of lower rally highs, and it's encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. So this is problematic. It suggests that despite strong earnings, investors aren't willing to give it the benefit of the doubt. So credit card debt rising is more of a factor that people are short of cash, but they're we've had, and I think most people have had, some form of living standard creep during the pandemic, that there's been a lot of revenge spending. People have decided that they want to live their best lives. They're doing whatever they can to afford it, and that's contributing to appetite for debt. But financial conditions are tightening, so there's going to be an end point where one runs into the other. And then we should also pay attention to the fact that the 10-year minus the 3-year yield, excuse me, 3-month yield, continues to contract at an alarming pace. So we're down to 35 basis points. And at the end of June, it was at nearly 150. So this has been a phenomenally quick decline. But one thing that I thought was rather interesting is that when we think about the fact that bond yields have actually been coming down, high yield spreads haven't really narrowed all that much. In fact, it's still an uptrend. We would anticipate, therefore, that if we are moving into more of a recession-type environment, that high yield spreads will continue to go higher. And we won't have a meaningful low in the stock market until the high yield spread bottoms, or excuse me, tops, so that we get a very clear evidentiary top coming in high yield spreads that will coincide with a significant low in the stock market. We're not there yet. So we certainly have a lot of cash that's been raised, and a lot of people have sold out of a lot of stuff, and that's not least because everything has been going down. But you need liquidity to fuel a big advance. So we're certainly in an area of potential support, and it's quite normal to see at least steadier action in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And that was a good week last week for the S&P 500. It pushed up out of the short-term range. But it's been coming down all year, and it's got to at least break the downtrend. And until it does that, we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the downside. And one thing that people have been conditioned to expect is that when the market pulls back by 20%, the Fed would ride to the rescue, and that just has not happened on this occasion. So we need to see some evidence that there's going to be liquidity coming from somewhere, and it hasn't happened yet. And until it does, then it's likely that asset prices will remain under pressure. When we think then about the evolving base formations we see, for example, in the ARK Innovation ETF, then it's been certainly tempting to think that this is the low. And it's encouraged people back in. I was speaking to somebody, one of my friends, over the weekend, and he was saying, well, I bought the ARK Innovation ETF 2 weeks ago. I'm up about 30%. And I was like, well, that's great. And you get those kinds of nice, quick pops on the upside in a bottoming process. You do get counter trend rallies. And we've had a good sized counter trend rally. But until you get a bigger one, until you get something that's absolutely going to chasten the shorts, then there's still the potential that we're going to be in a really lengthy period of consolidation, and that we should be looking elsewhere for clear signs of value opportunities starting to prosper. But then, of course, there is the wild card, and oil prices were steadier today and bouncing from the region of the $100 area on Brent. So this continues to look like a range, and it's at the lower side of the range. And Russia is basically saying that they're only going to supply about 20% of the capacity of the Nord Stream 1 pipeline. So that is not good news for Europe. And when we think about what this means, it's none of us are really in a position to say that we've experienced of this kind of activity. At least we haven't had an embargo like this since the 1970s. And even then, it was a different environment. So European natural gas prices have been consolidating in the region of the December high, and it looks quite likely that we are looking at a really significant energy crisis for Europe. And it's not really a question of paying for it, because European LNG supply or import capacity is already at its maximum. They can't import any more LNG, so therefore they have to start buying or leasing floating storage, hooking that up to their pipelines. It's exceptionally expensive, and even then they may not be able to get as much supply as they could potentially want. So the DAX index bounced a bit last week. It is very hard to imagine that it is going to be able to do anything very much more than a short-term bounce with so many pressures mounting on Europe. So then the ECB is talking about raising interest rates. They even did it. They went up 50 basis points last week. How much further can they possibly go? The euro is hovering here around the 102 level, having had a little bounce around parity. And the dollar has paused a bit because people are trying to game it. There's a lot of trading around, just trying to take positions because there's a real thirst for a big payout to be right on the big macro reversal. But we just don't have any evidence of it. And I think it's just too early to take those big punts, because Europe has this massive challenge in front of it. We're in July right now, and it's been a rainy few days in Juneau. I think it rains here more than it does in where I'm from in Ireland, and that's saying something. But it does give one some thought about what winter is going to look like in Europe, and it does not look like it's going to be a pretty picture. And we're probably just seeing a foretaste right now of just what kind of pressure is going to come to bear. It's hard to imagine the euro can rally in that kind of environment, because raising interest rates is not going to ensure that Europe has more natural gas. So gold prices, having rebounded rather impressively on Thursday and Friday, we're in negative territory today, so down about 9. This is still just short-term steadiness in the region of the $1,700 area, and we just need to see something more convincing to clearly suggest a low of meaningful significance. And silver remains weak, and pushing back down to the lower side of this range, when we zoom out and look at this on a weekly basis, we're right in the region of the upper side of the base formation. If it's going to bounce, it really should be getting about it. And so far, there's been a distinct absence of upward dynamics. And platinum has been quite choppy and was in positive territory today. But it also has a lot of work to do to really ignite investor interest and give people confidence that the $800 level, or I guess... Yes, I think $800 is accurate. The lower side of this range from the beginning of 2016 is going to, in fact, hold. So there's a lot of uncertainty out there. There's a lot of hope that we have deep oversold conditions and a lot of cash has been raised. I'm a little bit, I'm not convinced by that same argument. I would have jumped on these kinds of indicators in the past. You know, if we look at, for example, the number of shares on the NYSE that are trading below their 200-day moving averages. We're back in the region of the lows that signified significant bottoms in the market in 2020 and 2018 and 2016. But back then, they also coincided with big liquidity infusions. We're just not seeing that right now. And the other point is, especially when we look at the amount of cash that's been raised, we have to pay attention to the fact that there's been a huge volume of money printed. So the quantity of cash sitting on balance sheets isn't truly reflective of just what we might anticipate from other kinds of environments in the past. So I want to see clear chart evidence to support a bottoming hypothesis. I'm willing to give some credence to the view that we might be in the region of a low, but I want to see the evidence first. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I do apologize for the noise, and I wish all the best to all of you.